Stand by. Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
We're excited to welcome tech expert Brian Heater to the show, talking about the new Apple 5S and 5C phones, as well as what to look forward to with the new iOS coming your way. Fashion expert Paul Gahunia drops in talking fall fashion, and we get an update from the founder of 60 Minute Kids Club, Matthew Young, about the importance of keeping kids active both mentally and physically. We're also joined by our social media expert, Patrick Charles, talking to us about the rise of streaming concerts.
Your need for sound.
With the fast-paced evolution in technology, our tech expert Brian Heater joins us to talk about some new and fun tech gadgets going on. Brian, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you for having me, Kelly Alexander.
I appreciate that, and we're very excited to welcome you to the team here. So I wanted to talk to you, I guess, first and foremost about Apple, seeing as how they recently had their big Cupertino special where they unveiled some new products, including their iPhone 5C and 5S. Can you explain to us what those are and what's going on with them?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess, a bit of a surprise, although we did see some leaked photos in to the event. But Apple traditionally has just unveiled one phone. This year, they doubled up on it, came out with two. So the 5S, pretty clear successor to the 5. You know, it's got some souped-up innards. It's, you know, it's about twice as fast from a processor standpoint. The camera's a little bit better. Everything's been improved a little bit. It's, I would say, kind of an iterative upgrade, not a huge evolution over the past version, but certainly a better handset. And then the 5C came out. So this is really Apple's play at the cheaper handset market. I mean, they helped pioneer the smartphone space, but obviously Android sort of come in and taken up a lot of the market share. They're doing a really job appealing to the lower end because there are so many handset manufacturers out there that a lot of them can afford to make cheaper handsets. There are a lot of emerging markets, so there's a lot of places in the world where people can't necessarily afford PCs, so smartphones are really kind of becoming their primary driver for any sort of computing. So these are all sorts of things that Apple is interested in now. They're looking to expand their market share. They're looking to become a company that can really appeal to people outside of just really these high-end devices that we're used to seeing from the company. So this is a $99 smartphone. The big caveat here, though, is like every other smartphone that you get in the U.S. market, that's $99 on a two-year contract. If you buy the phone unlocked, it's going to be $549, which doesn't sound that cheap because actually it isn't that cheap. Mm-hmm. So this ultimately does end up being a play for these emerging markets. So, you know, this isn't as much of a play for, you know, parts of Asia, you know, like India, for example, parts of Africa, places like that, which I guess some of us expected Apple to be going at. Instead, it's really an attempt to come out with kind of an entry-level smartphone for people. So people who are interested in the iOS experience, who want an iPhone, but don't necessarily want a dollar for it.
I read some critiques this morning, and I just wanted your thoughts on one part, I guess, with regards to the 5C, that it's really not cheap enough.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. Again, $99 on contract is pretty appealing, especially if you look at a lot of these prices for higher-end smartphones. The 5S, for example, is going for $199. That's pretty standard for flagship handsets. But again, it's, you know, you really have to look at the unlocked price. You really have to look at people who are buying handsets in countries where they're not necessarily buying them on these, you know, on these two-year contracts. Because again, that really, if you really do the math, honestly, the price of these phones comes out to a lot more than just $99.
Now, I wanted to speak to you about this, I guess, fingerprint scanner business that's going on, because I read the claim they're not going to store your fingerprint. But I have to tell you, as much as I love gadgets and doodads and I love my iPhone 4S and I love all things Apple, I really don't feel comfortable with this scanner. I feel like that's like the last thing that they can take from me, and I don't like this idea.
Yeah, it's a fair concern. I right now, this is something that we definitely, you kind of have to take Apple at their word on, because obviously there's no data regarding this either way, and everything is, according to Apple, going to be stored local. So this is going to be loaded to the NSA or anybody else. They're not going to have a fingerprint on record. I understand not being comfortable with it. I guess I would say that there's certainly a precedent for tricks before this phone. Mm-hmm. You know, companies like Lenovo/IBM, so those ThinkPad business computers, they had fingerprint scanners on them for a while. This is not really a new technology by any means, but we're living our life more and more in the cloud, so a lot more of our data is going up into the cloud. So yeah, a lot of reason to be concerned, but this is just yet another thing that I think we're going to kind of hold Apple's feet to the fire on.
So, Brian, I wanted to talk to you now about, I guess, what Android is going to do. Do they need to do anything based off of what I've now released? Because they're already doing super well. I read, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I read that their market share is actually more than iPhone or Apple. So do they really need to do anything?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to need to continue to evolve. And they're continuing to evolve. You know, there's the new operating system due out for the near future, which is, I would say, kind of unfortunately named KitKat. They struck a deal with the candy maker to get the naming rights for one. Yeah, they're continually evolving. What we saw yesterday, though, was hardware. So we've already seen iOS 7. We've already seen all of the features that are coming out from that. There's a lot of cool and exciting ones. Some of them are Apple kind of playing catch up to Android. Notification Center is a pretty good example of that. It's something that Android has done very well for a while now, and then Apple hasn't really done all that great. But this was purely hardware news, you know, save for a couple of pieces. The fingerprint scanner is one of them. But it's not Android that we're talking about here in terms of competition, because, you know, Google, aside from owning Motorola and striking some deals for those Nexus hands, Google is really in the business of making phones right now. So it's Samsung that we've got to look at, and LG and HTC and companies like that. I think once Apple puts something like biometrics on a phone, that's something that a lot of other companies are going to look pretty seriously at. Apple was probably playing catch up a little bit with the cameras. We've seen a lot of really good cameras from other handset manufacturers. So yeah, I mean, we're in a good place right now because we got a lot of good and big companies making very good phones, and that just means that we're going to continue to get better and better phones.
Speaking of that, I wanted to ask you, because, you know, this is the 5S, let's say, if you are heading the upper market of iPhone, I guess, with regards to, you know, the fact that they've had the 5, now we've got the 5S. Are we ever going to be surprised again, Brian? Like, I got my first iPhone, I guess I was a bit behind the ball, I got my first one, 2009, like the 3S or whatever. Like, I loved it immediately, and it was, like, such a huge thing. And then I remember when, you know, and it was funny, because at the radio station I was working for, like, when the iPad came out and when the 4S came out, like I was sent out to cover this. And now, like, we don't go out to cover sort of Apple anymore because the lineups just aren't there. It's not happening. So can Apple do anything that is really going to surprise us? Or even for that matter, like a Samsung, like, are they going to do anything that's going to be like, oh my God, like, you know, or have we topped out?
Yeah. I mean, the smartphone space is, you know, it's been around for a while now. I think in the near term, we're just going to continue to see pretty iterative advances. You know, they're going to continue to get faster. I think in Samsung's case, they're probably going to continue to larger and larger until they can't, you know, until the human can't really take it anymore. I think it's really going to take Apple kind of branching out into new markets, into new spaces. There's a lot of talk of them making a TV. There's been a lot of talk about that for a while now, though. Definitely see that happening in the near future. There's been some stuff getting to the smartwatch space, which is interesting. We have yet to see a company really make a mainstream smartwatch. Pebble has done very interesting, and it's got some early adopters, so some big nerds are very excited about that. Samsung announced their own smartwatch. I was in Berlin at IFA last week and got to see them unveil that. It's a pretty flawed device right now. You know, again, in first generation, I think, you know, if Apple really took a swing at something like that, there's a good chance that be pretty popular from the outset. But Apple's really in a recruiting space right now, and I think will continue to be for a while. You know, Steve Jobs hasn't been gone all that long. According to all accounts, the iPhone 5 was still one of his babies. So we have yet to see Apple under Tim Cook take any really sort of serious chances. And I think it's kind of they're a little bit overdue for one of them now.
Okay, you brought up the thing for a second, and yeah. I wanted to speak about that for a second, because, again, it sounds kind of like, ooh, like it's almost like your own Siri having this thing attached to you. But I heard that you really need to be able to be near to tether it, or to be, you know, like there's lots of limitations on this thing.
Yeah, it's not Dick Tracy yet.
Okay.
Most of these devices are smartphone surrogates, so idea is that you still have your phone in your pocket, but you don't have to take it out all the time, which I can certainly see some benefits of. Instead of getting a buzz in your pocket and having to pull your phone out every time, you can just get all those messages delivered right to your watch. There's something appealing about that. There is a camera, Samsung device. The positioning of it isn't quite great because it's more meant to take pictures of other people. Okay. Which is a little bit creepy when it comes right down to it. But certainly, you know, if we're going into the Dick Tracy space, I could see the benefit of video conferencing on something like that. One of the things that Apple came out with, aside from that new processor, is there's also a new motion sensor built into the i5. So Apple is making serious play at fitness applications.
Okay.
That is something certainly that could be built into these watches. So like a pedometer, if you're one of those people who likes to track your bike rides or something like that, you know, there's certainly some ability there. And then again, keep in mind, it's like anything else. It's like when the smartphones came out, it's like Google Glass. We're talking about something that's really a platform here. So we're talking about a new piece of hardware that's being opened up to third party developers, and it's up to them to find out all of the cool stuff they can do with it.
Okay. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is tech expert Brian Heater. You can learn more about it at Engadget.com. Please don't laugh when I say this, and BlackBerry users don't get upset when I say this. Can they do anything? Can they right the ship, BlackBerry?
I want to say yes. I think it's in everybody's best interest to have as many players in the market as possible right now. And BlackBerry 10 is an appealing operating system. I mean, it's a cool operating system. They've come out with some cool phones, the Z10 and the Q10, which has a keyboard. I think they sat on their hands for too long. You know, if BlackBerry had come with a real iPhone competitor a lot earlier, there would have been some appeal there. People for a very long time were willing to jump away from having a keyboard on there just to a touchscreen keyboard, so they could have they waited too long to make a major change to both their operating system and their hardware. And Samsung came in and Apple came in, and now we're in a place right now where so many people have smartphones. Smartphones are so prevalent right now that, you know, business IT is kind of going out of its way to allow people to bring their own devices in from home. So all these companies are adding extra security. There are all of these enterprise functionalities going into play to let people use the device that they use at home, at work. So there's really not much of a space for dedicated business phones. So I don't see anything happening again in near term. There's some talk about BlackBerry selling bits and pieces. They're bringing Messenger over to Android and iOS, which should bring some money. But again, they waited too long. If they had done that early on and there were still a lot of people really devoted to BlackBerry Messenger, then they could have brought more people over. But it's hard for me to think of a way that would really turn the company around.
Okay. And before I let you back, what, you know, one gadget or one thing do you want us to be on the lookout for in the next little while that is like exciting to you?
Like some tech or stuff that we're doing?
Yeah. What, you know, tech or any product coming out that you think might, let's say, for example, be the big Christmas seller or something?
It's a good question. I mean, you know, we're pretty late in the year right now. So, probably anything for the most part that's coming out for Christmas has already been announced right now.
Okay.
There's a good chance that some new Kindle Fires are coming out. Those are always pretty popular Christmas presents. Those are kind of those are great tablets for people who don't really know a lot about tablets. So those are, you know, if you're buying your one of your untech savvy parents a Christmas gift, that's a pretty good one right there. But beyond that, I don't see any major announcements happening. I mean, we could all be surprised. Maybe there is an Apple smartwatch on the way, but I wouldn't count on it.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate all of this.
Great. Thanks for having me.
That is tech expert Brian Heater. Again, for more information on all of the good technical stuff and more info on Brian, check him out at Engadget.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Our very own fashion expert, Parmal Gohania, joins us to talk about what the latest and hottest trends are going to be for the upcoming fall/autumn season. Parmal, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thanks for having me back, Kelly.
So happy to have you back. First of all, a big shout out and thank you for doing our Fashion Fridays on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/KellyAlexanderShow. People check it out. Every Friday, you give us some looks, and you've been doing amazing stuff all summer long. And now we're heading,
thank
obviously.
You. I hope everyone's enjoying it.
I love them. I love seeing the comments that we get too. So that is definitely a big shout out to you for all of that. And now as we, you know, march or sort of marching into fall, what could you look forward to seeing, I guess, this fall season?
Well, fall, there's a huge spectrum of color this fall, and there's definitely no shortage of it, but it's definitely centered around jewel tones. So there's a lot of teal, purple, sapphire blues, emerald, even a lot of rubies here. But in addition to the jewel tones, there's also a lot of blush pink, so almost like nude color, and then olive. We're seeing the utility green again, which everyone I know is a fan of. And then lots of shades of gray. So a lot of gray on gray, which is always really popular for fall. But I think like definitely the jewel tones are adding a nice pop to it.
Are there any patterns, I guess, that you foresee being really popular this autumn season?
You know what, Kelly? There's always lots of patterns. And this year's definitely no exception. I think like for me, the most popular ones are definitely inspired by royalty. And as many people who have lived through the 90s like you and I have, it's a lot of 90s prints coming back and a lot of the street ghetto fab, you know, a lot of the mix of animal prints that we used to see like full on in jackets. And you remember that. I think a lot of people remember the 90s. Well, it's what they're back. So pull them all out if you have some really neat pieces in your wardrobe. But some of the ones that are, like I said, the most popular are definitely the tartan plaid. Was hugely inspired by the British monarchy, as a lot of things are. I don't know, I think like fashion's taking from Will and maybe a little bit, and it's definitely like a lot of plaid with some twists. So you're seeing definitely like the kind of regular plaids you'd normally see, but then a lot of houndstooth, herringbone, and tweeds mixed in with some polka dots. And even like a lot of floral and plaid mix, which we've, you know, not that we've never seen it before, but it's taking it to a kind of almost extreme level and really making it different and new. And yeah, the floral for fall is really popular as well. And it's, I think that a lot of inspiration was taken from a lot of foreign countries. So for instance, like the Orient, there's a lot of pieces that are very much like kimono style. So there's lots of floral prints that are taken from China. And then Brazil with the matador kind of embellishment. And then India, of course, is very popular as well for all of their embroidered pieces. So we're seeing a lot of fully embossed skirts, a lot of dresses with full prints or embroidery on them, and lots of floral kimonos. And of course, my favorite, the printed blazer, is everywhere as well.
When it comes to, I guess, work attire for the fall season, what can we expect to see?
You know what? For work attire, there's so much variety, but I definitely feel like this fall is, it's the structure is the most important thing in work attire this year. It's really centered around like the natural curves of women. So I'm really enjoying seeing a lot of these bell skirts come back, and a lot of look style skirts, and a lot, but there's a lot of structure as well. There's a lot of shawl blazers, but my favorite would definitely have to be a great fitting white blouse, which we're seeing a lot of detail items add to it. So like there'll be a nice fitted white blouse with a black bow on it, and bow is just really powerful and over, like it's a big bow. And then you're seeing a lot of ruffle details on, you know, the fronts of shirts. And again, like a lot of lace appliques on top. So, you know, really there's something, it's not just your plain white shirt. I mean, of course, that's always a nice staple to have in the wardrobe, but kind of the crispness of the white against, you know, some of the more darker power suits that you see. Like, I think every woman should have a great power suit in their wardrobe. And this year there's so many, there's always the gray, the charcoal gray, the black, and the navy, but we're seeing a lot of this straight leg trouser come back, which is so flattering on women. And, you know, pair that with plenty pump and you're just ready to take a world almost. But I really think the whole idea of taking that starter piece of the power suit and then mixing it up with all the great fall pieces and mixing and matching maybe black or gray blazers with white herringbone, white and black mixed herringbone skirt or dress would be like a great piece for fall. Or even taking navy, which is so uber popular in fall, and you know, mixing with a pinstripe wool blazer or skirt or whatever you might want to do with that solid piece. So kind of really mixing and matching, taking that staple suit, but then taking it, those pieces, and doing more than just wearing them together all the time. I really feel like that's kind of the big thing for fall. So taking those classic items and reinventing them. So that's always kind of the thing with fall is those pieces should last you throughout, you know, they're almost seasonal to a certain extent. But stay tuned because this Fashion Friday, we're going to be going into work attire, which is going to be really fun, I think.
If we talk accessories, then whether it's for work attire or like casual stuff, do they match up or are they vastly different when it comes to fall?
For work attire, I feel like the pointy pump is making a really big comeback this year. You're kind of seeing it pretty much in flats. Actually, the pointy shoe is in flats or in a pump. It's really popular. So I think that's like something that probably everyone has still in their wardrobe. So it's nice to kind of keep those pieces and then bring them back out, you know, when they become popular again. Not that they really do ever go out of style, but they look great with a wide leg trouser. I think for women's accessories, the big totes are really popular in terms of handbags. So, you know, just a structured tote, not something that's flimsy, but really more of that boxy look is almost kind of like, not like a briefcase, but more square. So something that with, you know, that really looks professional. And then I love the ankle boots. I think that the ankle boot, you can find one that's definitely work appropriate to wear with a skirt. And, you know, the Oxford shoe, we all remember those. You have them in flats and in pumps look great with a dress or with pants, you know, because they lace up and they look so professional. And then, you know, of course, there's always ways to make work attire more fun with accessories. And I think belts are a great way to kind of go a little bit edgy, but not, you know, off the charts with maybe like big necklaces. Accessory, like a belt will just put the whole out together because you can tuck in your shirt and then just show off maybe a little funky belt with it. Even a snake print or a different color, because there's so many different varieties of texture this year for accessories in terms of belts and handbags and shoes, because they're really mixing a lot of materials, even in clothing as well as in accessories.
What would be your, I guess, most important go-to pieces for the, what would you want people to, like, if you're going to go out and get stuff, this is what you should get?
Well, I think it depends on everyone's wardrobe, of course, because there's so many pieces that, like I said, we may have a wardrobe that we didn't think would ever come back in style. And you know what? We never wanted to kind of get rid of them. And now you're looking for ways to kind of reinvent them. I feel like this is a great year for that. But I'm a little torn at this. I knew you were going to ask this question. And it's hard for me to answer. But I think two of my favorite trends would still have to be the textures that are being mixed in fall. So I really think that something that we're seeing that's really popular still is the leather applique legging. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to do a full-on leather legging, but, you know, mixing that in with even a fur vest and putting a cool sweatshirt, because sweatshirts are huge in terms of wear this fall. And I love the different hardware zippers, buds, and all kinds of things, even emboss that they do on sweatshirts this year. It's really cool. Like, I think if you did that, a little long sweater with, you know, even a leather legging, and then you added like a little fur vest on top of that that's a loose fitting, it would just look really cool. And I think my favorite shoe this fall, and I definitely own a few pairs of them, are the wedge sneaker. And I know lots of people want to say, oh my god, I can't believe you said that, because who knew that wedge sneakers would make a comeback? But I think they're so hip because you can wear them, you know, with skirt or legs or, you know, a really nice skinny jean. So that's kind of my one favorite for casual. And then I love the fact that tartan and plaid has made like such a huge impact this season. So if you did like a tartan boyfriend blazer with a crop trouser and a white blouse with a pointy pump, I think like that would definitely be a way to wear it to work and still be really trendy. And so a tartan boyfriend blazer or something in that print definitely be a must have for me.
Okay. Now I have two sidebar questions for you. So I'm leaving fall behind for just a second. You did bring up the British monarchy, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on, this was, you know, 2 months ago, but I just want your thoughts on this. What did you think of Kate's coming out of the hospital look? And further to that, can she do no wrong in fashion? Because it seems like she will be smart about this till the day she kicks it.
Well, she has lots of very intelligent people behind her, and she does have definitely a great fashion eye. I think that her coming, to answer your question, her coming out outfit was very symbolic. I think it was very, actually, it showed a lot about her as a person. She just kind of wanted to look ordinary. I think that every woman coming out of the hospital after they have a baby doesn't look super glammed up. So if she came out in a fur jacket, everybody would be like, what's with this girl, right? So she came out really easy breezy. And, you know, having just had a baby, and she wasn't all dolled up. She was just kind of normal. And, you know, I thought the floral dress was really cute. And it reminded me a lot of Princess Diana when she had William, like mm-hmm. she wore a very similar outfit. So I think, you know, I think there's so much thought that goes into a lot of the things that that couple does in the public eye. And I think someone watches them closely. Really, I appreciate that. I think it's a really nice touch that they want to at least look a little normal sometimes. And then, you know, yeah, she can do no wrong in the sense that, well, she hasn't done anything really wrong in a very long time. And she just has, she's the it girl right now. She's a classic beauty. I mean, she's not overtly model status, but she has a way of putting herself together that I think any woman who's really classy and sophisticated can appreciate. So I really feel like it's, you know, the world watches her and definitely takes inspiration from her, and as she does it from them. So I think that it's a two-way street.
Now, next question with regards to British ski, because you said that you watch them sleep. So my next question or my next thought would be about Prince William, because when he came out of the hospital, obviously he looked casual. I have to say, I really hated the belt he was wearing. I thought it did not help him. And here's my thing, like, I love him. I think he is great. I find he's a tad wee bit boring when it comes to, like, when he's dressed up in any of his, like, army gear or, you know, regiment, you know, he looks fantastic.
He looks like he's going to sweep you off your feet.
Right. And even he's, like, in a black tie, like, they obviously pick the right suit for him. But, like, in that instant, like, I guess my thing would be, do you think he could / would try to pull off, like, a David Beckham look? Because David is very well put together, but not crazy,
yeah.
Right? Like, I almost wish, like, he had to come out in a bit of a different sweater, like maybe David Beckham would have worn.
Definitely. I think he can definitely take a little bit of inspiration from, you know, other celebrities. But I also think maybe when you feel like you're going to be the future king, that not that you need to be born, but maybe that's his way of being taken seriously to a certain mm-hmm. extent. I mean, his dad wasn't very, not that he should take, you know, any advice from his father, but his dad isn't really, like, you know, who we look at for fashion advice either. But I agree with you. For his age, because we're on the same age as him, I think that he could be a little bit more hip.
Yeah.
Day-to-day wear, for sure. Especially to keep up with such a hot molly of a wife that he has.
Yeah, like, that's my thing. Like, I feel like, I don't know if it's, like, I know he's a very down-to-earth guy, so part of it, but, like, I've seen him before where he's got even just cool ball caps, and he looks, you know, like, at a polo
like, you
trend.
Want to JT up a little
yes,
bit, right?
Yes,
like, you
just
want him
a bit.
To definitely put the funk on, and yeah. I really think it has to do, I mean, I know, like, I'm not an expert, this is just what I see, is I think maybe he wants to be taken a little seriously, and that's his way of maybe getting that across, although, you know, there's sophisticated in putting together a very detailed look, and I think he could definitely do a little bit more, especially considering, you know, plaid and tweed are such a staple in the British robe. So I think he could do so much more, maybe even a bow tie here and
right,
there
right.
like a very casual one. But, you know, I think it probably depends on his stylist. I'm sure that there's other people who do that, but, like, Kate knows how to pick things that look really good on her,
mm-hmm.
you know, that flatter her. And I think maybe he needs to change his stylist.
Yeah, like just a little, like just take it up a notch. And then my other.
I would agree.
Okay. And then my other thing, which is again a wee bit of a sidebar, but I have to get your, because it's driving me bananas, is this high-waisted look that is gone that you see all the celebrities wearing, like Miley Cyrus wears it, I've seen Taylor Swift wearing it, like I guess it's almost like the Daisy Dukes again coming back.
Yeah,
I think
except
they
some
look
people shouldn't wear
terrible
them.
Like, and please tell yeah. me this is not gonna last for like 5 seasons, because like I honestly, like, I would love to see, you know, Taylor Swift on stage, you know, I get that on stage she has to be in her on stage get up, but like I almost think she would look cuter, you know, in a pair of like funky cargo pants, you know what I mean, like, or cargo shorts rather. Like, I hate these high wasted things that it's like 1972 in.
You know what? I'm not going to lie to you. I absolutely hate them too. We
okay.
could probably make a I hate kind of short club out of it, because literally I want to burn every pair I see.
Because they're unflattering, Parnell. Like, they're often unflattering.
Oh,
like, even for
I
a
know,
skinny
but,
person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you watched Miley's performance, and I'm sure you did, Kelly,
yep.
At the MTV Music Awards, I was like, you know what, girl, I know you're size zero, but I can see slab out of your bum, and
right.
I don't need to see that. And
mm-hmm.
not only that, it's just run across stage. You look like hoochie, and you got the money to spend on great wardrobes
mm-hmm.
and great stylists. You know, first of all, from the hair, I'm not even going to go there, because that's just another, we could do a whole segment on her,
right.
her performance and her
right.
look. But I personally feel like they're already gone. I mean, I think that we're seeing the last little bit of it.
Okay.
And, you know, definitely in concert, I think that there's a place for them. I mean, like, you know, Beyonce wears short shorts. A lot of performers wear short shorts. I just feel like there's a generation of artists doing it very untastefully.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really making, I mean, everybody wears short shorts, but it's really how short do you go before, you know, it's not tasteful anymore. And I think that's where we're finding the discrepancy, that people don't have judgment call, or they think,
right,
you know, I get heard of less is more, and it's what you don't see. But I really personally feel like they're gone already, Kelly. Like,
okay,
I'm not
good.
Really paying too much attention to them.
Okay.
It's not for me. It's not on my, I definitely like the high waist, but I also think that you need to find a short that's appropriate for you. Like, I live in a city where, you know, we have a certain festival at one time of the year where it's like everyone's green card to wear the hoochiest outfits they have. But is that okay? Absolutely not. I mean, when you're a certain size, of course, where would you, if you feel comfortable in it, go ahead. You know, but at the same time, you can't be like half of your body outside of those shorts and
yeah.
feel like you're not comfortable. First of all, I don't want to see that. I'm sure nobody else
no.
wants to see that. But I'm pretty sure that they're gone.
Okay.
I mean, you know, trend was actually meant to be worn. A lot of it meant to be worn with tights underneath. At least that's the way it's supposed to be. Like, I know a lot of girls that still wear this trend and pull it off great, but of course they wear tights underneath it to have some kind of print. You know, they take it to that next level. A lot of the ways we saw it, again, in the 90s or in the 80s, like the way we used to wear it then. But now it's just like, let's show as much skin as we can and hoochify ourselves.
Terrible.
You know.
It's terrible. But thank you for letting me know, because I've seen a few people in and around my hood, particularly teenagers and stuff, or early 20-year-olds. And, you know, like you said, if comfortable, go for it. However, you look terrible. Like, a lot of times you just look, and I wish that their mama or someone would tell them they look terrible, because they look terrible. And so, and it's like,
I know,
it's
we're
terrible.
Probably going to get a lot of back for
we're
this.
Probably gonna...
Girls are probably going to send us pictures saying, oh my God, like, look how I rock it.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can rock it, but I'm just saying, I really feel like, even if you did, like, I don't even know, just like a cool, like legging under, I don't know, just something. But I mean, and it needs to cover your cooch. Like,
yeah.
When you bend over, I should not be seeing your yoo-hoo, and like, he needs to see that. It's wrong, right? Like,
yeah, it's wrong.
I mean, we must sound like we're a million years old, but I really feel like it's dead and gone. And
okay.
Like, only these celebrities, like, on stage think that they can rock it. And even them, like, you know, watching it PR'd, Miley's performance was not that. It was more like, I needed to look away and I wanted to turn off the TV every minute that I watched
right,
it further and further.
Right. Yeah, terrible. So. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for all this. I really appreciate your time on the show today and all the fall fashion you've got going on. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Kelly. Until next time.
That is our fashion expert, Parla Gahunia. And again, make sure to check her out on our Facebook page for Fashion Friday each and every Friday, facebook.com/Kelly Alexander Show.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
The concert experience is one that can't be beat. We all love being amongst a crowd of like-minded fans to see our favorite artist, Janet Jackson. There is, however, an alternative that's quickly becoming more popular as our connected world becomes increasingly sophisticated. The streaming concert, watching from the comfort of your own home, is not such a crazy idea. To tell us all about this is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So I subliminally put in my Janet Jackson, because I want everybody to still love Janet.
Of course.
So how is money actually be? Actually, first explain the streaming concert. So is it like a channel that you're watching, or is it like a stream?
It's a stream, but I mean, it can be anywhere. Like right now, what's happening this month actually is the iTunes concert, of course,
okay,
which is fantastic. It goes on every night. There's different artists and major artists. I mean, there's been Elton John. Lady Gaga was the first act. Katy Perry is closing it. So it's you know, top billed artists. But the cool thing about it is you get to see them from your own home.
Wow, which a lot of people now have these 55-inch, 60-inch TV screens anyways, so...
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's the fun of it. I mean, it's never the same thing as going to a show. That's
right.
That's the first thing, first
right.
and foremost. This isn't in no way you know, to sort of replace the idea of going to a concert. Mm-hmm. However, this is a fun thing to do. You do want to check somebody out, especially if they're not even playing in your town.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I have to bring up the Janet thing for just a sec, because I, for example, the Velvet Rope Tour, which I think you said you saw here as well in Montreal.
Yes.
So I went to see it four times. I saw it twice in Detroit. I saw it once in Toronto. I saw it once in Montreal. And obviously, we all know I'm a Janet fanatic, so that's its own thing. But being just in those different cities, like the venues and just the different, and like there is magic in the air when you go see a concert. And
absolutely.
And then, but it's funny that she actually did release that concert series as a DVD, so I obviously got that as well. And it's funny because when I watch the DVD, which I actually haven't done in a while, but it takes me back to certain moments of where I was at that concert.
Oh, yeah. No, so I get what you're saying. I mean, you do get the vibe from watching it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how much money is being made, or how is money being made off of these types of gigs?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, it's kind of like it's kind of offshoot revenue, because there's two things, okay? Like, first of all, there are companies that that actually put on shows for you. They do a stream from your house.
Okay.
There's a thing called Ustage It, and Stage It has like – there are a whole bunch of artists that have sort of profiles up there, and if there's someone that you like, you can pay to see one of their shows, and basically they go for a goal, and you can put in, it's usually like $10 or somewhere around there, and fans of that person can watch the porn from a super intimate venue. But as far as money being made, I mean, there's a lot of sort of offshoot revenue, because what happens is, you know, you might wind up buying an album or something. I actually watched some of Lady Gaga's show from the first iTunes concert, and I'm not that much of a Lady Gaga fan, but it was still an opportunity to see her without, first of all, paying $200 to go see her in a 20,000 seat venue, and, you know, having to go because I'm not, again, like I said, I'm not that big of a fan. So the cool thing is I get to watch. But if I did, you know, if I was so inclined afterward, you go out and you buy an album.
Yeah. And it's funny because I feel like this would be something I would do to check out maybe an artist that I'm, like you said, that you're not so into, or you're just learning about and you don't want to drop like $100 on or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome. I think that's a really good sort of idea. And would you say that the streaming, you know, these streaming gigs are, you know, we sort of talked about being there. Do you think in the grand scheme, it's going to be more important to watch these things as a stream as opposed to being there?
Well, I think I don't think it'll be more important, because I think people will always love going to gigs. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important just for awareness of things, because a lot of times, I mean, if a band, think about it, a band is touring that you like and they're touring in Europe and you can't see them here necessarily, it's kind of cool that you can watch them on your TV.
Right. Okay.
And so it's important from a sort of promotional standpoint.
And who's footing the bill, I guess, on all of this?
Well, the biggest ones, obviously, you can guess, are Apple and Google. And I'll tell you why. Because Apple has their, you know, their Apple TV, which has an app built into it to watch the iTunes concerts.
Okay.
So you basically just have to turn it on. You can watch any of them on your TV. Okay. You can watch it on your phone, iPad as well. But, I mean, put it on your TV if you have an Apple TV. As far as Google goes, they do a lot of streams, like during Coachella, which is massive. They do a lot of streams so you can watch it from home, basically. And people say, oh, you know, is it like cannibalizing the sort of concert business? But it's not, because I'm not going to spend thousands of dollars to go to Coachella.
Right.
Yeah. So the fact of the matter is, I mean, you can watch it. You can watch bits of it at least on YouTube. And, you know, why not?
And I like the idea of watching something like Coachella, because, see, I know a lot of people like going to festivals. I don't know that I would.
Right,
like, I've been to a couple of them, and it's like either rip-roaring hot, and you know what I mean? Like, and there's thousands of people, and you don't really want to ever use the washroom facilities. Like, it's just so I would but there's always great acts there, like Coachella, like, or the iHeart Radio Fest. Like,
yeah, exactly.
All of those ones. Like, I would love to go see some of these things, because there's so many great acts that are on the same bill. But I don't want to stand there for 16 hours, you know?
That's the thing, waiting to see somebody that you happen to like who's taking the stage at 2 a.m., right?
Exactly. And what's in it for the artists like a Lady Gaga, like a Katy Perry?
Well, I mean, it really has a lot to do with just awareness, right? And I mean, it's the same thing for the people putting on the shows. Going back to Coachella, how many people do you think went to it last year?
No clue.
Like a guess, 80,000 people.
Really?
Okay, so 80,000 people went to Coachella, right?
Wow.
How many people do you think watched it virtually on YouTube? How many do you think streamed it?
I'm going to say 2 million.
Yeah, 4 million.
Nice.
So that's the thing. I mean, it's great that, you know, we're always aware that people are playing at these gigs, but you can't always go there because, first of all, talking about airfare, it's not just a question of going down the street to a gig.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's great for the artist because it's massive exposure, and it's great for the event itself because, look, we're talking about Coachella. Neither of us have ever been to it.
Exactly. One time, Patrick.
One of these days.
So in the grand scheme then, like, what would you – are you into this whole idea then? Like, you think, like, this is here to stay?
Oh, yeah. I love it. I think I've watched quite a stuff as it is already. Over the last couple of years, they've been doing the iTunes Festival. There's only – where it's happening this year is like 3,200 seats, I think. It's a place called The Roundhouse.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, you're getting to see like pretty major acts up close. And you can even watch the shows after they're done. It's a pretty great thing for a music fan.
That's awesome. Well, Patrick, thank you as always for this.
Thank you.
That is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. You can learn more about him on our website, kellyalexandershow.com, and also make sure to follow him on Twitter at GetPatrick.
kellyalexandershow.com.
Keeping children active is vital for their long-term health and well-being. Executive Director and 60-Minute Kids Club, Matthew Young, joins us to talk about a project that he has begun to get more and more kids active on a daily basis. Matthew, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Kelly, thanks a lot for having us back.
So, you know, to set the scene again, we've had you on the show before, but for people that might be new to this, where did the idea of Kids Club actually come from and how long is it in existence now?
Well, the Kids Club, I came from feedback from teachers who invited us into their class to speak about health and wellness. And we went in to speak and gave the information and education campaigns that are typically associated with trying to motivate kids to get healthy. And the teacher challenged us. He said, you know, what I really was looking for was an activation strategy, because there's enough information and education, people struggle with the activation side of it. So if you could help us with that, we'd be appreciated. So we got to work on doing that.
And is this a labor of love for you, or is it just part of your life now?
Well, both, actually. It's a labor of love because I'm super passionate about bringing health and fitness and the benefits of that to as many people as possible. But it's also something that's really necessary. You know, personally, I don't think that we should be where we are in terms of standards and grades. You know, we receive a D in terms of our physical health for the children, and you know, the obesity rate is climbing, the instances of childhood diabetes are climbing. And in Canada, it's just unnecessary. It's unacceptable as well.
How does Kids Club actually work?
Basically, Kids Club is designed to be an elementary school-based program, and it's designed to increase the compliance around healthy habits. So what we do is we go in and we host assemblies in and around the busy times of the year. So basically, we've broken the year, school year down into 3 45- or 60-day challenges that have a defined start and a defined stop. We go into the schools and we give a launch assembly, and that assembly is given by a faculty member, teacher, athlete, kids club representative, whoever you know, we deem safe to work with kids and is also passionate about health and fitness. They give an overview of general health concepts, and then they get right into describing what the 60-Minute Kids Club is all about and how it works. At the same time, we send information home to the parents. And they, you know, our school is involved in this program. Your kid's going to come home today and talk to you about getting on the site. And then they go log on the website, find their school, and then every day they begin tracking their healthy habits. So we've got 5 healthy habits. One is nutrition. One is activity. One is screen time. One is hydration. And one is sleep. So unlike most programs that only kind of end up catering to the top 20% because it's activity-based, this allows everybody to have a participation and a role in a team, which is their school. So when they log on, they find their school, and when they calculate their daily points, those points aggregate into their school. And we determine things like who's the most healthy kid in the grade, most healthy grade in the school in the district in the region in the province.
Can you explain to us what sort of activities you actually do in the Kids Club? And I guess it's not only physical activity, I assume.
Well, in terms of the activities that we do, what are we tracking? Is that the question?
What kind of activity are the kids partaking in during your sort of those sessions, if you will?
Yeah, so we're not an intervention and we're not a curriculum-based program, which is a great question. These are activities that they're already doing. There's already enough curriculums, there are already enough programs, after-school programs. What we try to do is, if a school doesn't have that resource, we'll try to pair with that. But we're not in there actually providing it. We're just really the tracking recording mechanism that gives points and incentivizes to get active and, you know, we have suggestions, et cetera. We want to make it fun. This has to be fun. You know, there's three things that are needed to make any program sustainable. Number one is incentive to participate. We cover that with the prizing. Number two is accountability to the program, which is the daily health trackers. And number three is a follow-up to what's going on. And we provide that to the teachers, and to the parents and to the kids through the tracking and recording platform. It's very similar to the recycling program, where it's introduced to the school and generate conversation and stimulate the conversation at home.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is Executive Director and Founder of 60 Minute Kids Club, Matthew Young. Make sure to check out their website, 60minkidsclub.org, and that is 60. You said earlier that these sessions have defined starts and ending periods. Why have you done it that way? Does it give people more incentive to get stuff done because like a set time or a set number of days?
Yeah, you bet. That's a great one. One of the pieces of feedback that we got when we had University of British Columbia do a study of effectiveness of kids programs across North America was that kids, the attention span for programs and teachers as well, preferred something with a defined start and a defined stop. They wanted to get away from programs that were introduced December 5th, ended June 28th. And by that time, you know, interest had waned or it had petered out if there was no consistent follow-up. The teachers are not looking for another thing to do. They've got enough things to do, and basically they don't want to have another thing to have to administrate. And that's really the beauty of the 60-Minute Kids Club program, because we do all that administration, we provide all the tracking and reporting, and all the teacher's job is to do, really, is to make sure that they're talking about it and reinforcing it at school.
How can parents and teachers get involved and make this happen?
Great question, and it's really easy. We're a registered Canadian charity. This program is completely free. So there is no excuse for anybody not to get involved in an elementary school setting. Parents can get involved by going on the site and signing up their schools quite quickly. From there, we'll be put in touch with an ambassador. The entire program is turnkey. We deliver the entire program kit to each school and basically answer all their questions from there. If they need help getting ambassadors, speakers, etc., we do that. You know, we visited every member, you know, the ministers of education and ministers of parks and ministers of health, every single province across Canada. And, you know, and we've got lots of resources and tools for free that teachers and parents can really get on with. So all they have to do is go to the site and sign up or ask questions.
Now, you mentioned that this is in every province across Canada. My listeners are not only in Canada, but I've got some, you know, awesome Americans listening and people overseas. Is this going to expand worldwide?
We sure hope it will. We sure hope it will. That's the goal. Again, we want to keep it free, and we want to scale it to as many people as possible. I mean, obesity, childhood obesity, and inactivity is certainly not something that's just confined to Canada. The United States could use it. We have a lot of contacts in the States. We would love to get it in the States. We would love to hear from people there. And, you know, we want people, as many people as possible, to use it for the kids and it's for our futures.
Now, you mentioned, again, the word future, where we're headed. Do you have any feedback from some of the kids who have already gone through the program? Do you think, you know, as they grow older and get into teenage land and beyond, do you think they'll pay it forward and that this is now like a part of their life?
You know what, Kelly, that's a good question, and that's the hope. So we're trying to do, and why it's aimed at elementary schools, because, you know, 5 to 12-year-olds, years from 5 to 12 are formidable habit-building years. So if we're to entrench this ideology and, you know, it's about sleep, it's about hydration, it's about proper nutrition, it's about activity, and it's about, you know, decreasing our screen time and managing that, if we can entrench that, just like singing, you know, learning to sing the national anthem every day, that's our goal. We really want to hit the kids early. We want to make it fun for them again. It's got to be fun. It can't be something that's just, you know, oh, here, we're doing this again. You know, we really want to do that, and we really want to increase the compliance around healthy habits.
Obviously, all of the points that you have in the program are very important, the hydration, the sleep, all that kind of stuff. If you had to pick, though, which one do you think stands out the most as the most, I know they're all sort of equal, but, like, does one stand for you that really needs to get done in every kid's life?
You know, people ask me that question all the time, and they think the answer is going to be physical activity. Nutrition is a huge part of leading a healthy and active life. I think it's something that needs to be educated, proper nutrition. I mean, we are what we eat. We're inundated with cheap, easy alternatives that taste good because they're loaded with sugar. That is important. And I would say that you know, no one is more important than the other. But if I had to, you know, if people said, okay, if you could only do one, which would it be? I think it would be nutrition, because quite frankly, you can accomplish a lot by eating well.
Now, for my teachers that are listening right now, if this is not in their school already, and they're interested in getting involved, I know we talked about sort of how we can do it, but in your experience, you know, if a teacher wants to get involved, does she need to get all of her teachers involved, all of his teachers involved in their school, or do they go with the principal?
No, great question. So it works a variety of different ways. How we decide is that the program is to be as inclusive as possible. So we've got some schools that say, you know what, we don't want our kindergarten and grade ones to focus on that this year, but we do want the 2, 3, 4, 5s to get on it. We say, no problem. Some schools will phone and say, you know what, we've only got one class. We can't seem to get buy-in from the rest. Can we do it with one class? Yes, under that school. We measure the results based on the number of people that start the program and finish it. So that's where we get our percentages of participation from that factor into the overall, you know, the overall score. So, yes, anyone can do it. We've got schools that say to us, you know what, we love the program. We've got a couple other programs, so we'd like to do this program every January. And that's fine. The program, the incentives work like this. At the end of the program, 45 or 6 days, we go back into the school and we recognize the top 10 healthiest kids by way of their trackers. At the end of the year, the schools that have been in all 3 challenges, so there's a fall challenge, a winter challenge, and a spring challenge, they qualify for the grand prize, which is a field trip. So those field trips have been anywhere from visits to aquariums to Vancouver Canadiens baseball game to the Toronto Blue Jays Mooner game. We will go into the communities and the provinces and we will find, you know, grand prizes and deliver them to the school. So to answer your question, yeah, there's a variety of different ways that, that schools can get involved. You know, tracking is you can do it 3 times a week. You can do it 7 times a week. It just goes to whatever your points are, whatever your comfort level is. What's important for us is that kids are doing it consistently.
Perfect. Matt, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate all this. And again, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be interested in it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly.
That was Executive Director and Founder of Kids Club, Matthew Young. Make sure you check out their website for all the information that you need, 60minkidsclub.org. I want to give a big shout out, as always, to my guests this week, Brian Heater, Parmal Gahunia, Matthew Young, and Patrick Charles. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time from Mike Dooley. The secret to living the life of your dreams is to start living the life of your dreams today in every little way you possibly can. Don't forget to check us out on social media. Lots going on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow, on Twitter @KAlexanderShow, and of course our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Any comments or questions, drop me a line, Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have an awesome week. You and I'll chat soon.